Fire season in Wisconsin is underway, and we're checking in with the DNR on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kant. Glad you could be here. Our Department of Natural Resources says, yes, spring, indeed. Unlike out west, spring is the most dangerous time for wildfires here, and it's after the snow has melted, before plants, trees, and grass turn green, fires can spread rapidly. Has a fire ignited near your home or your property? What was that like? What measures do you take to reduce the likelihood of a wildfire spreading? What are your buffers? 800-642-1234. Michelle Witeka is a statewide prescribed fire specialist for the DNR. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network. Hi, Michelle. Can you hear me? I think we're having some problem hearing Michelle. How about Mark Soss? Are you there?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Great. Mark, hi. Mark is a DNR Cooperative Area Forest Ranger who assists wildfire responders in 10 counties in southeast Wisconsin. So, Mark, let's start with you. Your agency says there are almost 1,100 wildfires in our state last year, burning more than 2,500 total acres. Is there a typical fire year or a typical wildfire?
Well, our typical fire year usually takes place in spring. So over 60% of our forest fires, our wildland fires in Wisconsin takes place in the spring. But as for a typical year, obviously last year we had almost 1,100. That's going to vary greatly just based off of the weather. With the last week or so, we've been very wet, obviously going to keep our fire numbers down. So last year was a dry spring and very close to our 10-year average in fire numbers and acreage as well.
So the biggest fire burned nearly 230 acres near Menominee Falls last April. How did that fire compare to a typical wildfire in our state?
So most of our fires in the state, the average fire is anywhere from 1 to 2.5 acres is okay. What we run on if you look at our averages again. So we do have the possibility of these large, challenging, dangerous fires, but most of the time, we're able to get to them very, very quickly. We average less than 15 minutes, either the DNR or the fire department to be on scene after somebody calls 911. So we're able to keep most of our fires very small. So occasionally we have these larger, more challenging ones.
What happens when you arrive on scene to ensure that you know what you're dealing with, that it is a wildfire?
So the planning and the thinking out process is pretty significant when you get to a fire. So we want to make sure we've got the whole picture in mind. Obviously, if you're dealing with a larger fire, if you're dealing with a fire that's 40 acres in size, if it's square, each side is a quarter mile. So it's a lot of ground to cover and a big picture to get your head wrapped around. So we want to come up with a solid game plan, make sure we keep our firefighters safe, keep the public safe, and we utilize all of the resources that we have to get a better picture. In the DNR, we heavily use aircraft. We use our air attack planes that will fly over the fire and help us get a bigger, better picture of everything. And a lot of our fire departments now have drones, or the sheriff's department has drones. So that helps to our firefighters get better eyes in the sky to see exactly where that fire is. If it's too large, you can't see the whole footprint on the ground.
Wow, so much coordination, air and ground there. Let's bring in Michelle Witeka, who is the statewide prescribed fire specialist. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning.
Good morning. So spring is also the season for prescribed burns. What is the DNR's approach to prescribed burns, and how much acreage is managed this way?
Sure. So the prescribed fire program in the state works across the state on all sorts of different habitats. Our typical year is about 250 to 300 burns. And we average around 25,000 acres burned per year.
What is the primary purpose then for these prescribed burns?
So the primary purpose that we conduct burns in Wisconsin is for the purpose of wildlife habitat maintenance or restoration. Now, we may have some secondary objectives that we also want to accomplish. There's a very small portion of burns in the state where the secondary objective for that burn would be to get rid of excess hazardous fuel. But for the most part, we are taking care of and maintaining fire dependent communities that that rely on these disturbances to keep them in the state that they are.
Why not use mechanical thinning or doing it a different way instead of burning? What is the, you know, why is burning ideal?
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good question. And we get that a lot. So there are aspects of mechanical and chemical treatments that do overlap with the benefits of prescribed burning. I mean, obviously with mechanical, you are changing the structure of the site, both horizontally and vertically. And with chemical, you are changing the composition of what's out there. But there are aspects to prescribed burning benefits that can't be achieved by these other treatments. Fire consumes vegetation and provides ash on the ground that mixes into the soil and returns all of those nutrients back into the soil to help stimulate more growth. So just that one aspect alone is not something that you can get from spraying or from mechanical. And the one thing about chemical spraying is that, you know, you're still putting chemicals into the ground, regardless of what kind of chemical it is, it's still going there. And a lot of the herbicides that we can use are not as targeted as we would really desire. And so you may go out there to spray something, but you may be inadvertently spraying something else that you want. And so, you know, if a native species is supposed to be there, you run fire through there and it will actually be benefited from it. And so, yeah, I guess the solid short answer to that is that fire provides benefits that you just cannot get with these other pieces of equipment.
With these other means. Fire. Yes.
Right, right.
Well, let me reintroduce you both. Michelle Wateka there is statewide prescribed fire specialist for the DNR. Mark Soss is a DNR cooperative area forest manager who assists wildfire responders in the southeast part of our state as we look at fire season and hear your questions about wildfires, about prescribed burns, 800-642-1234. Mark, you know, you have helped put out wildfires and served as a burn boss leading crews doing controlled burns. And I'm wondering, how do fire managers ensure that the fire will not escape in these controlled burns? Because after all, it is wildfire season at the same time.
Exactly. So we put a ton of prep and planning into our prescribed burn program. So we've got and thorough written plans for all of them. And then the biggest on the ground difference is we've got our fire breaks, our containment lines. We know where that fire is going to start and stop and making sure those are solid and well patrolled. We have all of our equipment and resources there, obviously, before we start. So once we have that game plan and everything laid out and we have great solid fire breaks, we're very confident that between ignition patterns and our staff and resources on scene, we can do great work for the habitat and keep that fire right where we desire it to be.
Can you explain what a containment line would be or what a fire break would be? Would it be a road or some other, you know, what would that be?
So sometimes our fire breaks are roads. It is basically bare mineral soil or another fuel that cannot burn. So roads are great. We can burn right up to service roads, county roads, whatever it might be. We also put in rotivated brakes. So we'll take a big, basically rototiller behind a farm tractor, and we can turn that soil into bare mineral soil as well. So our fire brakes are going to be anything where that fuel stops and that fire is going to stop as well.
We have a pair of state DNR officials on fire suppression and controlled burns in this fire season. Mark Soss, their DNR Cooperative Area Forest Manager, and Michelle Wateka, prescribed burn specialist for the state. What makes Wisconsin wildfires different from wildfires out west? Have you seen a prescribed burn and wondered how it did keep contained and under control? What steps do you take to prevent fires when out camping or in the forest? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with the DNR on the Ideas Network. We're talking about spring fire season with the DNR amid a drought covering most of the state. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DNR says wildfires can start anywhere, especially where people live, and it's people who cause almost all wildfires, most often by burning debris in the spring. What questions are in your mind about wildfires or prescribed burns? Still time, 800-642-1234. We have the DNR's Mark Sauce and Michelle Wateka. They're with us for about 10 more minutes. I want to ask both of you about what impact drought has on both of your work. Starting with you, Michelle, much of the state experiencing drought, as you know, and the drought monitor saying the southern third is experiencing moderate drought conditions, rest of the state abnormally dry or normal. What does that mean in terms of controlled burns?
That's a really good question, and it's something that we most definitely had to work with last year. One of the biggest watch-outs or concerns that we think about when we're in a drought is what are the fuel types that are now probably more receptive to fire than usual? So what kinds of, when we're talking about larger logs, when we're talking about peat marsh, that usually doesn't have an issue with fire. Well, drought can change those things on the subsurface levels. And so when we are working in drought, we have to be cognizant of if we're working with peat, we have the, if we don't do things the way that we need to, we can have issues with ongoing peat fires at that site. We can also have issues with, like I said, heavier fuels like downed trees, which usually take a really long time to dry out and aren't usually receptive to fire. Well, at this point they are in the game and they are a factor. And then, so in summary, it's mostly just holding issues, being mm-hmm. able to maintain control of the burn and acknowledging that, you know, fire is not just going to run past these places. You actually do need to take care there. The other thing that really impacts us is that drought can have a major stress on trees within the burn unit. And if there are things like oaks and pine that we'd like to not only have them subsist, but also regenerate, we want to make sure that we're not burning too dry in order to damage those trees and cause additional stress. So those are the two things that we think.
Mark, what do you think about? Do you see the straight line correlation? Does more drought mean our state is more likely to experience wildfires, or is there not such a straight line there?
Fairly straight line, and just like what Michelle was saying, when your ground is drier, we have less moisture in the ground. Obviously, as that drought code increases, there's less moisture in the soil to keep the fuels that are laying on the ground wetter. So you think of those big logs, tipped over trees, things like that. So just like Michelle was saying, it is going to, these fires, it's not really going to affect too much how quickly they spread. They're going to spread at the same rate, but now where it would pass over a larger log on the ground, for example, now that log is going to be burning because there's next to nothing for moisture in it for it to absorb off the ground. So what it does is it makes our job truly extinguishing these fires, and we call it mopping up after you get containment, making sure that fire is completely out. It increases the time committed by our fire departments and our DNR staff substantially when we have to look at every single piece of downed wood or debris in the forest now because it is all receptive to fire. So just like what Michelle was saying, it's the same thing on the suppression side.
You have to be such attention to detail there. I want to turn to burn permits, Mark. You know, residents can get free permits to burn brush. How important are burn permits for preventing out-of-control fires?
They're very important. They're one of our biggest tools to doing that. So I would have the listeners go to the DNR's website, dnr.wi.gov, and check out and just search a keyword fire to find out where they are in the state. We have three different areas of forest fire protection in the DNR. We have our intensive, extensive, and then our cooperative areas. So anywhere in our intensive or extensive, we require a DNR burning permit. Last year, they are free. Last year, we issued just under 48,000 of those. So those are changed every day based on the weather, how hot, how dry, how windy, factors like that. And it allows people, it tells them if and when they can burn debris. So that yard cleanup type of burning that folks are doing this spring. So over a third of our fires usually are caused by debris burning. So if we can limit burning to safer times of the day, usually in the evening from 6 p.m. until midnight or during wetter periods, that's going to substantially reduce our risk of those fires escaping.
Wait, you said over a third of the wildfires are caused by these burning of brush and other things?
Correct. Yep. Everybody wants to get out in the spring, make their yard look nice after a long winter. So raking up pine needles or leaves or whatever, the last sticks that came down. And that's where those beautiful spring days when folks are out burning, it's nice to work in the yard. Those are unfortunately the same days where fires spread very quickly usually.
And so those can really get out of control if you're not watching them and paying attention to when you can be burning on what days and times.
Correct. So this is, this type of work is a chore. So that's campfires for cooking or warming. If you're going to sit around and roast marshmallows or enjoy a campfire with friends or family, those we do not regulate at all in the DNR. Those are allowed at any time because that's something that people enjoy doing and they're going to be there and be paying attention to it and put it out like Smokey Bear tells you to. It's the debris burning, which is a chore. When you're doing that, you're in the garage, you're cleaning up, doing something else, and you're probably not paying as much attention to it as you should. So between the yard cleanup, and it's a chore. Not everybody's going to be attending it the way they should. So that's where most of our fires, a lot of our fires start in the spring.
Talking with Mark Soss, DNR Cooperative Area Forest Ranger, assists wildfire responders. Michelle Wateka, statewide prescribed fire specialist, taking your calls here with the DNR on prescribed burns and wildfire season, 800-642-1234. Michelle, I'm wondering, when you do a prescribed burn and carefully thought out, what does happen to all the critters in that area or the wildlife in that area?
Yeah, that's also a really good question. And it's totally understandable that someone would ask. A lot of these animals that choose to make their home in a fire-dependent ecosystem, and when I say that, I mean things like prairies, emergent marshes, oak savannas, oak barrens and pine barrens, those are all fire dependent. And the wildlife species that live there have adapted to experiencing these occasional disturbances. And so what typically happens is you'll have burrowing animals that utilize those burrows. And it's almost like the African savanna where there's a watering hole in a drought. You have burrowing animals that will share burrows with other species because it's, an emergency situation. You have animals that will fly. You have animals that will run. Ultimately, there is a temporary disturbance to that site. But, you give that site a matter of simple weeks to recover, and wildlife are already going back to utilize it. And we make sure that, when we're burning, we are burning in a mosaic on the landscape. So even though we've burned this particular unit on a property, right adjacent to that is similar habitat. And so there's always somewhere else to go. And like I've said in other interviews, I've gone back to do wildlife surveys in other jobs immediately post-fire, where things are still smoking on the ground, and wildlife are already coming back into that unit to forage for burned insects with birds, to forage in the ash with deer and turkey. So they're very used to seeing fire. They know how to escape, and they know also how to utilize it after that.
What about the pollution from the smoke of a prescribed burn? Is there any way to limit the impact on communities?
Absolutely. And so for the last 2 years, especially with the pandemic concerns and air quality and especially people being comfortable to breathe, we have pretty strict standards in place on what air quality levels we can burn at, what smoke dispersal levels we can burn at. We do look all the way downwind every time we send smoke down in that direction. And we try to pick the direction and the day that's going to cause the least amount of impact on basically civilized areas. Mm-hmm. If there are things that are very sensitive, let's see, nursing homes, schools, hospitals, airports, we tend to just not burn in that direction. Highways are another one. So smoke management is a huge component of our burn planning. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of days where we could have the perfect prescription line up for us, but if we don't have that good smoke dispersal, we're just not doing the fire.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a sense of your work. Michelle Wateka, statewide prescribed fire specialist for the DNR. Mark Soss, DNR Cooperative Area Forest Manager, assisting wildfire responders in the southeast part of our state. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.